Well, as somebody noted, it's a little lighter in here today, and I think it has something to do with the preacher. So I want to start a new movement to stop putting the preacher in the email for the week. I'm just saying, last couple weeks we were packed out, and we have Dr. Chow, Dr. Zakovich, Dr. Burnett, Dr. Fraser, and Daniel. One of these things is not like the others. Go ahead and open up your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs 18, verse 21. I've titled today's message, "A Mouthful of Life and a Mouthful of Life or Death, Wisdom for the Tongue." And we are going to probe the book of Proverbs to see what it has to say with regard to our tongue so that we might gain wisdom for our speech. Now, there has been much said about the tongue, not only in the Bible, but throughout the whole world as well. People in every era have had something to say about what man's speech is like. I've looked at some of the various proverbs from different cultures around the world to see what they've had to say concerning the tongue, and I compiled a list of some of my favorite allegedly cultural proverbs from these different areas, and I thought you might find them interesting. There is a Spanish proverb that says, "A closed mouth catches no flies." Keep your mouth shut, you'll get bugs flying in there. An African proverb says, "The tongue weighs practically nothing, but so few people can hold it." I like it. It's good. The Irish say, "Better is a slip of the foot than the slip of the tongue." The English say, "A still tongue makes a wise head." The Italians say, "The smaller the heart, the longer the tongue." And the Armenians say, "The only sword that never rests is the tongue of a woman." Yikes. Surprisingly, there was several other proverbs from different areas that had to do with the tongue of a woman. I don't know what they're talking about. I'm not going to touch that one, so happy Valentine's Day to this is a day that businesses profit off men putting their foot in their mouths and hoping that flowers and a box of chocolate will get them out of the doghouse. So and if you really messed up, there's always jewelry, so yeah. Going on, there's a Mexican proverb that says, "Let not the tongue speak what the head may have to pay for," as we just noted. And the Swiss say that the tongue is the worst piece of meat in the world. Now, that is a very grim outlook towards the faculty of man's speech. Clearly, people recognize that your tongue can get you into trouble. And it can't just be me, the only person here who at times has said something, and as you're saying it, it's like everything slows down. You're just like wanting the words to come back, like, "No, why did I say that?" Warren Buffett allegedly said, "A fish who never opens his mouth will never be caught. Your mouth is not an asset, but a liability." And I think we're all familiar with that reality. Our mouth can produce great harm or great good. Keep your mouth shut, and you won't be the fish who is caught, filleted, and fried. That's what we can learn from today. It's the end of our study. Let's go home. Well, our key verse, Proverbs 18:21, says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." Scripture is very clear that the tongue has power. The tongue has great power. This reminds me of a guy that I used to work with for many years in a warehouse. We worked together, and during that time, he got saved. He gave his life to Christ and became a believer, and when he first got saved, we had the best fellowship. I mean, seriously, all we did was sit around and talk about how much we love the Lord, how good the Word is, what God's doing in our lives. It was so sweet. But a little time later, he ended up going to a Bible college that was associated with his church, and the church that he attended was a Pentecostal church that held to the prosperity gospel, and so this college likewise believed in and taught the prosperity gospel. And so he went to that college, but during this time we worked together, we worked in different departments, so I didn't see him. It was a couple years later, we started working together again. He had graduated by that time, and he had learned so much. He had learned too much of the wrong stuff, unfortunately. He believed that his tongue had power. Great, good. Our verse says that. The tongue has power within it. But the problem is he had a misplaced understanding of the tongue's power. He believed that he could speak things into reality, into existence, such as prosperity, health, and blessings. And unfortunately, from this point on, we could no longer fellowship. He was constantly arguing with me about how little faith I had because I wasn't naming and claiming things for myself, because I didn't agree with his views, and I would tell him it's not scriptural. Rather, it's actually harmful, your views. He didn't like that, and so it got to the point that I would ask him, like, what do you do when you get sick? What happens when you're sick? Is it because you didn't have enough faith to claim health? Is it because you didn't speak it into existence? And he would literally, when I said the word sick, he would plug his ears and go, la, 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 I'm not going to listen to that, those negative words, because you speaking those negative words is going to create a literal sickness within me and everyone who hears it. Unfortunately, we no longer had the sweet fellowship we had before, and we would work together, and I would see him. We would drive around on these little motorized pallet jacks in this giant warehouse, and I would see him. He would literally be throwing fastballs of blessing at people. He would wind up, and just like in his own mind, he's throwing blessings at people, and I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing? He literally thought he was bringing a genuine blessing, genuine power upon people by the words he was speaking. And it was quite sad. I would listen to some of the sermons his pastors would preach at their church. And in one sermon, the pastor told everyone, I want you to pull out your wallets right now. Pull your wallets out, open them up, and start to shout at them. You are full. You are so overflowing with 50s and 100s. You're not even big enough to carry all the money that's coming my way. You are full. And I thought to myself, no, sir, you are the only fool here. And he would sit under this teaching. Sadly, you might think that's far out, Daniel. Not too many people hold to that, right? Wrong. This idea has taken root in many churches today. It's in the worship music that churches are singing, talking about, I want to speak Jesus over people. What does that even mean? You just say his name like it's an incantation or something, and it does something. No, people talk about, even outside of the church, they talk about manifesting. I'm going to manifest the future I want. I'm going to manifest the success that I want. I'm going to speak about it. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to attract success my way. I believe that there are probably more people than you think that lean in this direction when it comes to the power of their words. Sadly, my friend, he went on naming and claiming more stuff for himself, and that included a new and younger wife in place of his older one. Sadly, I look at my friend, and I ask the question, how did he have such a misplaced understanding of the power of the tongue? He believed that there was a mystical power tied to it, yet all the while he neglected its actual power to bring about the death of his marriage as he spoke to this woman in a way he shouldn't have. Oh, you did your hair? Looks cute. I like it. Is that a new outfit? You look good in it. Are you having a bad day? Come on, tell me about it. I'm here to help you. Open up to me. Those words led to the loss of his family. It cost him everything. Someone once said, words are free. It's how you use them that cost you. It's how you use them that cost you. My friend, you don't get to be the father in the same way to your children that you once used to be. They're not going to be there. You're not going to be there in the morning when they wake up. Why? Because your words killed that reality. Your words ended that for you. You were careless. You had a misunderstanding of the actual power of words. And they brought forth death in your life. Our words have power. The tongue has power to bring death, but it can also bring life. It can also bring healing. Think over your life. Recall all the words that people have encouraged you with, and all those kind words, all those words that built you up when you felt down. You meet with someone and they say the right thing, and you are just lifted. William Arthur Ward famously said, "Flatter me and I may not believe you. Criticize me and I may not like you. Ignore me and I may not forgive you. Encourage me and I will never forget you." That's the power of the tongue. Words can have such an encouraging and a lasting impact upon people if they are used rightly. And so today in the book of Proverbs, we're going to see this book is going to teach us three insights into the tongue that we might reap a good reward from it. And we've already seen two of these points. First is the tongue has the power of death. Second, the tongue has the power of life. And third, the tongue flows out from your heart. First, we see that the tongue has the power of death. Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. How does the tongue bring about death? How does it work death within people or towards people? Well, it can begin by enticing. Words can entice people. Proverbs opens with Solomon speaking to his son, and he's telling them about those who want to entice you to come along with him. Chapter 1, verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not be willing. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse.'" They entice you. "Come with us. Join us." But Solomon says, "My son, don't do it." They don't realize, he goes on and says, that they are actually laying an ambush for their own lives. The wicked use their tongues to draw you in. Now, words, they're not actions, but they can definitely lead to actions or influence actions. And Solomon goes on and he warns his son, he warns us of the strange and the foreign woman who seek to entice by flattery. Chapter 2, verse 16. He says that my words will deliver you from the strange woman, from the foreign woman who flatters with her words. He goes on in chapter 5 to say that, verse 3, the lips of a strange woman drip honey and are smoother, and smoother than oil is her speech. Oh, this woman, she speaks so well. She says everything you want to hear, my son. And her words are so smooth, they're so sweet. How can they be wrong? But what is their end? It's bitterness. He says, her end is as bitter as wormwood. Going on in chapter 6, verse 24, he says, my words are to keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the foreign woman. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished. My son, don't touch her. And you can do that if you stay far enough away that you can't even hear her. Don't get close enough to hear her words. Chapter 7, verse 13, Solomon goes on. He says, oh, my son, let me tell you something. I got a lesson for you. I looked out my window one day and I saw a simple fool walking down the road that leads towards her house. And as he headed in her direction, when he got close enough, it says in verse 13 of chapter 7, she seizes him and kisses him, and with brazen face she says to him, the sacrifices of peace offerings are with me. Today I have paid my vows, therefore I have come out to meet you, to seek your face earnestly, and I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I've sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come then, let us drink our fill as lovers until morning. Let us delight ourselves with the pleasures of love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone away on a journey far away. He took a bag of silver in his hand. On the day of the full moon, he will come home. He got close enough to her, and she grabbed him, and she began to entice him. Oh, I paid my vows. I've prepared myself. Everything is set in order. It's ready for us. The house is prime. No one's going to catch us. My husband's gone. Let's go back to my house. It's you I want and you only, and we'll just drink our fill of pleasure for as long as you want. Anything you want. She persuaded him. Verse 21, with her abundant persuasions, she entices him, and with her flattering lips, she drives him to herself. Hook, line, and sinker. The fish opened his mouth. He bit. And what was the result? He suddenly follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of an ignorant fool until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare and does not know that it will cost him his soul. You see the power of words, the power of the tongue to bring about death and destruction. It can be used as a weapon to entice, to flatter, to seduce, and ultimately bring death. We need to be careful to the words that we listen to as believers. You need to take heed to what tongue am I listening to? And not only that, you need to consider, what am I saying? It goes without saying that we should never use our tongue in such a manner so as to flatter with a crooked intent, seeking to manipulate people to do something that we want them to do or that they shouldn't have to do, they shouldn't do. It's this idea of, I just want to, with my tongue, slightly push the boulder and start to roll down the hill that inertia will take over and it won't stop. It's going to lead to an inevitable conclusion. Not only does the tongue entice you, the tongue can also enslave you. Chapter 6, verse 1. My son, if you have become a guarantor for your neighbor, have struck your hands in pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, and deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go humble yourself and badger your neighbor. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. The tongue can write a check too big for you to cash. How many people have been brought into a commitment or an agreement that they never wanted to be involved with or never should have? I don't really want to do this, but I already told them I would. I gave them my word. I signed on the dotted line. You need to be careful. Our words always need to have an honesty and a seriousness about them. Jesus addressed the idea of making a false oath, saying, I'm going to do something that you don't really need to or want to do, you don't plan on doing. He said, do not make an oath by heaven or by earth or by your hair, if you got it. Chapter 5, verse 37 of Matthew, Jesus said, rather let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything other than that is from the evil one. When he spoke of making false oaths, the word refers to the idea of closing something in. You fence it in. By heaven, I'm fencing this in. This is going to happen. I'm going to do it. And it's not an oath you want to keep. The idea is enclosing that oath in so as to keep. And I think Solomon would say to us, when you make an oath that you don't want to keep, you are the one that is enclosed. You are ensnared. You are enslaved by the words of your mouth. You've committed yourself to something you never should have done. Have our words bound us to foolish oaths at times? Maybe. Think of Jephthah promising the first thing to devote, the first thing that passes through his doors when he returns, which was his daughter. Notice how Solomon speaks of the one whose tongue has bound him in a bad agreement. He says, you've been snared. You've been caught. That's not a great image to think of. Imagine, for those of you who have ever signed like a contract with all the legal implications, imagine you sign the contract and the other party, as soon as you sign it, they say, I caught you. Oh, that would scare me. What do you mean you caught me? Am I tricked? Did I not read the fine print? I got you. Solomon says, no, in that situation, you need to deliver yourself. You need to deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. What does the hunter want to do to the gazelle? Wants to eat it, kill him, feed off him. It's not good imagery here. The result of such pledges is potentially catastrophic. And you can find yourself there because of poor words. Be certain that the business deal is one that you actually want to join in, that the marriage is one that you will see through to the end. When used foolishly, the tongue can not only entice, but it can enslave. So the tongue brings death as it does that, but it also it entices, it enslaves, but it brings about a devastating end. Proverbs 10 says, an ignorant fool of loose lips will be ruined. Again, chapter 10, the mouth of the ignorant fool draws ruin near. Proverbs 13, the one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. In verse chapter 18, a fool's mouth is his ruin and his lips are the snare of his soul. What is the big deal? They're just words. Just a little white lie. Just a little gossip. Just a little harmless joking. It's just words. It's not actions. But Solomon says, no, don't be deceived. Your mouth can bring about great harm. Your mouth can bring about ruin. Hear what James has to say. Go ahead and turn to James chapter 3 in the New Testament. James chapter 3. See what he has to say to us. Verse 1. Do not many of you become teachers, my brothers, knowing that we will receive a stricter judgment? A teacher, someone whose activity is given to speaking. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the entire body as well. Now, if we put bits into the horse's mouth so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, they are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot wills. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts great things. Behold how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our existence and is set on fire by hell. What James is saying, you would do well to keep your mouth shut. You got something in your mouth that can get you in big trouble. It is actually evil. Verse 7, for every kind of beast and birds of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing, my brothers. These things ought not to be so. Does a fountain pour forth from the same opening fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. Oh, the danger, brothers and sisters, the danger of the tongue and not properly understanding its power that it wields. You are walking around with a loaded weapon in your mouth. Be careful where you aim it. We need to pray like David prayed in Psalm 19, which is actually the same prayer I pray every single time I step up to preach or share with somebody. And he said this in chapter 19, verse 14, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Yahweh, my rock and my redeemer. A foolish person doesn't consider these realities. They don't understand the true power of the tongue to bring about death, and it brings about a ruinous end for them. There's a couple words when we talk about that idea of ruin. There's a couple words in the Hebrew that are translated in the book of Proverbs as ruin. One speaks to the idea of throwing something down and trampling on it. You're stepping all over it. That's the end you're going to have. If you're not careful with your mouth, you will be trampled upon. The precious things, the valuable things that you want to preserve, you don't put them on the ground for people to step on. You don't leave them there to get tossed underfoot. The other word in Proverbs that is translated as ruin, it speaks of ruin in the sense of terror and destruction. Chapter 8, Proverbs 8, 7, says, a fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul. It is bringing about a destruction, a terrifying destruction. Why does a fool's mouth bring about such a terrifying and destructive ruin? Well, Proverbs 10:29 gives us insight into that. The way of Yahweh is a stronghold to the one of integrity, but ruin, terror, and destruction to the workers of iniquity, no doubt with their mouths too. Yahweh is their ruin. Yahweh is the one who is their destruction. Yahweh is their terror. And that is what we need to know when we consider the insight that death is in the power of the tongue. A foolish tongue is enmity towards God. One who uses his tongue improperly, that is a sign of enmity towards the Holy One. The wicked with their mouths are going to be judged. And why does God hate the foolish tongue? Why does God hate such speech? Well, first, it's full of lies. It's full of lies. Chapter 6, go ahead and turn there now. Proverbs 6, There are six things which Yahweh hates, verse 16. Even seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked thoughts, feet that hasten to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. God hates lies. He hates the one who, the false witness who breathes out lies. He's the God of truth. He speaks truth. He loves truth. Satan is the father of lies. And don't you recognize that children resemble their parents? If you are a child of God, you are one who speaks truth. If you are of the devil, you speak lies. Proverbs 12:22, lying lips are an abomination to Yahweh. It brings ruin because it is at enmity with God. But it doesn't just lie. The wicked tongue also hates, and that's why God hates it. Proverbs 26:24, he who hates disguises it with his lips. Verse 28, a lying tongue hates those it crushes and a flattering mouth works ruin. They are disingenuous. They are not being honest. They say they like you. They say they love you, but they cover their hate with their tongue. And really, they hate those they crush. It's hypocrisy. They're nothing more than an actor wearing a mask. They're saying, love, love, but inside it's cursings. They hate you. And so the lies cover up the hate, and they use lies to bring about harm because they hate. That can't be reconciled with a God of love. It's opposed. It's set against a God who loves. The God who sent his only begotten Son so that who would ever believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. That God. The Apostle John tells us, he who says he loves God but hates his brother is a liar. Is a liar. The fool's tongue, the wicked tongue, it brings death because it seeks to destroy those that listen to it. Again, I ask the question, who are you listening to and what are you saying? Do you think that these people throughout the world love you? They're trying to entice you, come my way. And ultimately, they want to ensnare you, stay here with me. And ultimately, they want to bring you to an end. But yet, all the while, they're saying, we love you. We're for you. We care for you. We want the best for you. I'm trying to lead you in the way of truth, in the way of life, but they would destroy you if they could. We see this all over. You see it with politicians and musicians and actors and actresses. They want your ear. They want you to listen to them and follow them. Don't do it. We need to learn from this the necessity of carefully guarding over what it is that we hear, what we're listening to. And we need to also consider wisely how we are using our own tongues as we see the potency, the power of the tongue to bring about death. I mean, it's not a joke. It's not a thing you take lightly. A tongue used in this way is enmity, and it brings death as it entices and snares and brings people to an end. But that's not the only option. It doesn't just bring death. The tongue used wisely can also bring life. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Proverbs also shows us that life can flow from the tongue. Life can be a product of the tongue. Proverbs 10:11, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Proverbs 12:18, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs 15:4, a tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. And again, Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. As the redeemed people of God, we are called to be Christ-like. We are to be increasingly growing in our sanctification. And what that means is that you are to more and more every day think like Christ, walk like Christ, and talk like Christ. Your words need to resemble the type of words he spoke. Jesus said in John 6:63, he said, the words that I have spoken to you are life, spirit, and they are life. They're spirit and life. The very words I speak give you life. When Jesus began his ministry, it said the people heard him, and in Luke 4:22, it says they marveled at the gracious words which were coming forth from his lips. Oh, he's speaking grace, Oh, there is so much grace dripping off his lips. How sweet are his words. The Pharisees and the temple officers, the ones that hated Jesus, they were debating over who he was, and the officers replied to the Pharisees in John 7, said, "Never has a man spoken like this. No one is like him. His words are unique. They are unlike our speech." Jesus always spoke perfectly. His words brought life. His words brought healing. Every time he opened his mouth, it was glorious. With a word, he healed the sick. And with a word, he raised the dead. He restored broken sinners. He comforted the afflicted. Everything he said was perfect. Just imagine the things that Jesus said that aren't recorded for us, the conversations that he had that aren't recorded for us in the Bible. I think what it would have been like to just have like a regular conversation with Jesus about everyday routine things. You know, what would that even be like? How could you not even walk away from that being so encouraged and lifted up? Like, we're just talking about the game last week, and I just feel on cloud nine because his words dripped grace all the time. You guys know those believers that it doesn't matter what you talk about. You always just have such great joy talking to them. You walk away from any conversation and you're encouraged. You're uplifted. And that is because, like Jesus, the main focus of their life is the glory of God. The focus of their life is honoring and praising God and giving him glory in everything that they say, so it just exudes out of them. It flows in everything they say. It impacts all their words. It impacts their tone. There's a gentleness. There's a kindness. There's a sincerity to every single word. And we have the same spirit. We have the same message as Christ. Our words should have a similar impact. You see, we live in a world full of spiritually dead people. People who are broken, people who need life and healing. They don't need another voice that's going to tear them down. They can get that anywhere. That's in abundance. They don't have to go very far to be torn down and discouraged. Just turn on their phone, turn on their TV. They're going to get that. But how precious is it for people who are beaten and broken and torn down to come to the church and find the only true source of healing words? To interact with you on the street and be encouraged for the first time in a long time. It's impossible to bring spiritual life and healing to them apart from God's word. Flattery, lies, speaking foolishly, it offers no hope to anyone. It cannot aid, it cannot sustain, it cannot heal. There is no way that such speech can help a lost and dying world. And so when we speak as a wise person, as the one in Proverbs, and we speak like Christ who perfectly fulfilled Proverbs, we too have a tongue that can bring life. Turn to Proverbs 8, chapter 6. And I want to notice the characteristics of this kind of speech. We've already seen the tongue can bring death because, you know, it entices, it ensnares, it brings you to an end because it's full of lies, because it's full of hate. But look at this tongue. Solomon is speaking to his son. Proverbs 8, verse 6, Solomon says, "I will speak noble things, and the opening of my mouth will reveal upright things. For my mouth will utter truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straightforward to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge." Solomon is here seeking to lead his son in the way of wisdom, in the way of life. And he is constantly urging his son, "Hear my words. Listen to my tongue. It has the power of life if you will heed it." And he says, "My words are the words which are noble. They're upright. They're true, righteous, straightforward, and right. They are not crooked or twisted. They're not wicked." He says they're noble, that is, they're honorable, dignified. He says they're upright, they're even, they're level words. I've mentioned this before. I used to install doors and door jams, and you could look at a door once you installed it. You get off to the side, and you just line up the jams, and you see if you had it plumb, and if it was level, oh, it's smooth. That's good. That's the idea of upright here. It is straight. It is not crooked. These words are good. They are good quality. You immediately recognize the goodness of them when you hear them because they have an impact on you. You notice the quality of these. No one ever spoke like this before. These words are different. They are good. Proverbs 12:25, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. 15:23, a man has gladness in an apt answer, and how good is a timely word. Proverbs 15:30, bright eyes, glad in the heart, a good report puts fat on the bones. When you are crushed, when you are downcast, when you are discouraged, you don't want to eat. But when you are joyful, you feast. These words do that. They bring a feast. The good words lift, they gladden a weary heart, and they put some fat on the bones. Some of us, we've been hearing some good words lately. It's all right. It's your excuse. They rejoice the heart with their quality. They're good words. But they're also true words. Notice he says they're noble, upright, they're true. Proverbs 12:7, he who breathes out truth declares what is right. He breathes it out. Whatever comes out of his mouth is true. All of it. Everything. And that's contrasted with the fool who breathes out lies. Proverbs 14:25, a truthful witness delivers souls, but he who breathes out lies is deceitful. One breathes out truth, the other breathes out lies. The difference is one brings a destructive end while the other delivers people and saves people. One is sweet and one is rotten. Have you ever spoken to someone and their breath is quite overpowering and you're just off put by it? It's just everything you're breathing out, it's repulsive. I'm sorry, can't even make a face about it. How can I end this conversation as fast as possible? But that is the idea of the person who breathes out lies versus the person who breathes out truth. One is a fragrant, beautiful aroma, and the other one is death. The truthful tongue smells like salvation. It is true. It is good. It is true, but they're also righteous. He says, my words are noble. They're upright. They're true. They're righteous. They're straightforward. They are right. They go directly in front of them in the path that is ahead of them. They don't turn to the right or to the left. They're not crooked. They don't swerve. They do what is right. These words are perfect, and they will take you in the right direction. Proverbs 10:20, the tongue of the righteous is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many. You see the quality of these words. They are good. They are true. They are righteous. But not only that, the tongue that has the power of life also speaks up in the defense of those who are in need. Proverbs 31:8, he says, open your mouth for the mute, for the justice of all those passing away. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and render justice to the afflicted and needy. When you say what is good, true, and right, you speak on behalf of those who are in need. What wonderful words these are. They lift up, they give joy and gladness, they pull others out of a pit of despair. As a young Christian, I remember as a group of believers I used to hang out with, my friends growing up, and we spent a lot of time together, and we just loved to crack jokes on each other. And it was fun, you know, but I noticed after a while that was like all we ever did. All we did was crack jokes on one another, and we'd use scripture to do it, and just really twist it and just take a jab at people. And I started to wonder after a while, where's all the encouragement? When am I going to be encouraged here? It did come every so often, but it was few and far in between all the jokes. And I noticed that after spending time with them, I would often walk away just discouraged. Man, I don't feel encouraged. I feel down. I don't like hanging out with you guys anymore. And when I brought that up to them, they made fun of me, and I just cried and ran away. Don't get me wrong, I like the joke. I like the crack jokes. I don't like to miss an opportunity, but I also remember Ephesians 4:29. It says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for building up what is needed, so that it will give grace to those who hear. At the risk of embarrassing him, I would say that Pastor Joe is one of the greatest examples of that. He is the biggest encourager you will ever meet, I think. And he has to because he teaches Hebrew. So. You talk about being brought low. Try learning Hebrew, but he will be there encouraging you through it all. And he never misses a moment to encourage, so I had to embarrass him. So thank you, sir. Well, our words are to be for the building up and the edification of each other. You think about when our words are directed to those within the church, we are to be building them up in the most holy faith. We are to spur one another on to love and good works so that the body of Christ grows and it does what it's called to do. Every word of ours is to be aimed towards that end. And I want you to think